Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
Three films this week, which are pretty different from each other, except for the fact that they're all playing around right now. So that's something they have in common. And the first one is called Carmen. And as soon as I hear that title, and sometimes when I hear that name, I think of the opera Carmen by Georges Bizet. It's got to be one of the most popular operas ever written. And pretty much everybody, even if they're not familiar with opera, are going to know some of the tunes from it. And actually, this Carmen, this movie, is based on a couple of sources, one of which is neither of which is the opera, really. One of which is the novella by Prosper Mérimée that the opera is based on, and then there's another source as well. So it's really pretty much an original story directed by Benjamin Meyppier. And it's a mildly interesting movie. It didn't really do a lot for me, but it's offbeat. I was wishing it would have more to do with the opera, of which I'm an admirer. But the movie is very different. It has its points. And it is definitely a very, very contemporary, I'm not even going to say updating of the tale. It's a total reworking, rejiggering of the tale in every way. So what we have here are, yes, of course, a couple of lovers who are in for a bad time. One of them, whose name is Aiden, is a guy who has just been serving in the military in Afghanistan, and he's just come back to America. And he is now working with the Border Patrol in America. So again, this is a very contemporary telling of the Carmen story. And the Carmen of the tale, that's her name, her mother has been murdered in Mexico. And the cartels are after her, and she fears for her life every moment. And so she's got to get away. And so she is now being smuggled across the border into the United States to get away from the violence of the cartels. And sure enough, there is Aiden, who is working there as a Border Patrol agent. And there's a gunfight. And the next thing you know, of course, Aiden and Carmen are running away together. They become a team. Instead of hauling her in as a Border Patrol agent, he goes on the run with her. So that's what sort of sets the story up. And then a little bit later on, well, quite a bit later on, actually, they are hiding out in a nightclub. And the owner of that is a woman named Masilda. And she is played by Rosie De Palma. I should mention the cast. I'm going to interrupt myself here. Aiden is played by Paul Mescal, who recently had a very well-received performance in the movie After Sun. And Carmen is played by Melissa Barrera. The most familiar of these actors is, however, Rosa De Palma, who plays Masilda, because she has been in a lot of Pedro Almodovar's Spanish movies. So she shows up. She's the owner of the nightclub where Aiden and Carmen are hiding out. And she becomes another very major character in the movie. Now, again, the movie is definitely not an opera film. There are little scraps of the opera here and there. The opera is not completely eliminated from this, but it's mostly eliminated. There are some dance sequences, however, almost ballet sequences. And they kind of give the movie some punctuation and give the movie some variety. And whereas the dramatic scenes tend to have a really sort of a gritty, in-your-face realism, it's an unpleasant story about people on the run and inhospitable surroundings, the dance episodes sort of clash with that, and you may feel that they lend some more balance to the movie, or you may feel that they kind of interfere with the movie's overall tone. But it's nice to see a movie trying unusual things like this. The director clearly has a lot of imagination and wants to do something very different. I mean, in this day and age, basing a movie even indirectly on an opera is kind of a daring thing to do. And then again, there are unusual things in this film, like the dance sequences and so forth and so on. I wouldn't say that the movie is a musical, but it has enough music in it that it almost qualifies music and dance. And that gives it a kind of, it sort of crosses genres. And that's always, again, sort of an interesting thing to see. So my own feeling about Carmen, a number of people feel it's really a wonderful, wonderful movie. I feel it's kind of an interesting movie. When I came out of it, I didn't really have an any strong feelings one way or the other. I just said, well, that was an interesting film and now it's over. And okay, that's nice. So I think it's a good movie. It's definitely an art movie. It's a movie which is after an audience which wants something different and which wants something with a sort of a cultural pedigree. I can't say it's an excellent movie, but it's an interesting movie. And that's more than I can say for most of the pictures that are out nowadays. So Carmen doesn't quite make it, but interesting experiment. Our next movie today also has a very musical kind of a flavor to it in a certain way. It is called Chevalier, and it is based on the real life story of a guy named Joseph Bologna. And he received an honorary title along the way, Chevalier de Saint-Georges. And so that is where the title of the movie comes from. And he was in France way back in the late 18th century, around the time of the French Revolution, which plays into the story of the film. And interestingly, what is the main crux of the movie is that Bologna, again, a real person, he was really around. I've heard some of his music played by a symphony orchestra. He was mixed race. His mother was an African slave, and his father was a French plantation owner. You can read all the backstory in there, a kind of thing that has happened over the course of history all too often. In this case, not in America, though. He's in France. But he has such an astounding musical talent that he rises up in French society, again, eventually even receiving this title of nobility. Now, the movie begins with a scene which I think is completely bogus. I'm sure it never really happened. And it's sort of fun to see, but it gives you a sense of the movie's hero-worshipping view of Joseph Bologna. We see Mozart, the great Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and he is playing his violin in front of an audience. And the next thing you know, there's kind of a battle of the bands between him and Joseph Bologna. Joseph Bologna jumps up on the stage and says, I challenge, well, I'm not describing it exactly the way it happens, but basically, I challenge you. I can play the violin as well as you can. I can play the violin better than you can. And the next thing you know, they're both playing, and of course, the audience goes wild, and Joseph Bologna is launched. And by the way, he's still a kid. So then we see I don't mean he's a kid, he's a young man. And then we see his rise up through French society, and he becomes a great friend of Marie Antoinette, who becomes his big supporter, and he gets his title, and he has and all kinds of things happen along the way. Eventually, to his mother, the enslaved woman, who is now not enslaved, she shows up as well, and she becomes a part of the story, although a minor part. She doesn't really develop as, I think, a fully fledged character. And there's all kinds of other people, French nobility and musical aristocracy and all of that going on. And all this time, the French Revolution is brewing in the background, and then eventually it becomes not just the background. And this movie is absolutely not about the French Revolution, but before you know it, Bologna is wrapped up in some of the machinations that are going on, and there are meetings to whip up the enthusiasm for the idea of a revolution. And again, Bologna is kind of wrapped up in all this. So I got to emphasize one more time, Joseph Bologna was a real person, and this movie is telling what is, I guess, very, very loosely based. Again, there was never a violent contest with Mozart, I am sure. But the movie is telling a very loose version of his story. He is played by Kelvin Harrison Jr. I can't say again that it's a great, great, great performance, but he's good. And he certainly seems to be playing the violin with a lot of virtuosity a lot of the time. And so that's pretty pretty impressive. Samara Weaving is in the film. I've just been recently watching her on television. She's a gifted person. Minnie Driver shows up in the film. Oh, yeah, interesting cast overall. And Lucy Boynton playing Marie Antoinette. So we have here an interesting view of, I should say, an interesting mixture of the aristocracy and the cultural elite, and through all of this mixed race guy who is facing, yeah, fair amount of racism back there in France in the late 18th century, and getting involved in the lead up to the French Revolution, which eventually becomes the climax of the film, and so forth. So again, just as I said with our previous film today, it is not a great film, but it is another musically based film, Carmen and Chevalier, both very much based on musical topics, and both feature some good performances, and films which didn't really make a very strong impression on me, but which I respect respect for trying to do offbeat things. My big criticism of Chevalier is that it is not offbeat enough. It is a very standard biopic. There are no surprises in it, aside from some of the things that happened along the way in the story. As a movie, it is very, very by the numbers. And so I wish it were more original, as in fact, Bologna himself was quite original in the society of his day. But again, a movie that takes some chances, and I always respect that in a film. And our third film for the day, finally, is not dealing with music particularly anymore. It is called 1001, and it is the first feature film by A.V. Rockwell, who both wrote and directed, and it is quite a wide-ranging story. It takes place over a lot of years, but it does take place pretty much entirely in New York City. So it is very much a New York movie, and it is very much a movie about Black people in New York. So what we have at the beginning of this film, which is very much a drama, our main character, whose name is Inez, she has been in trouble. And she has been in prison on the notorious Rikers Island, a horrific place by all reports. And she is just getting out of Rikers Island and coming back to her version of a normal life. She obviously is involved in pretty shady, pretty seedy parts of New York life. She's in her early 20s. And she misses very much her little boy, whose name is Terry. And at this point of the story, he's about 6 years old. So something happens to Terry, and he ends up in the hospital, and Inez is able to go visit him. And suddenly, she just realizes how much she has been missing this little boy during her time in prison. And so she kidnaps Terry out of the hospital, and she takes him away with her, and now they are together, but they are living an exceedingly unstable life in Manhattan without any money, with only a few friends to support them, and that sort of thing. One of the things that she has to do in order to keep a hold of Terry is to keep his very existence a secret. If the authorities find out that he's with her, of course, they will at the very least snatch him away from her again and probably throw her back into prison. She has, after all, taken this boy against every possible rule and regulation. So she's got to keep him secret. And eventually what she does is she changes his identity. She gets a job, and she's able to get a hold of some fake papers which give him a whole new name and a whole new identity. Then eventually she gets a new boyfriend named Lucky, and he doesn't get along very well with young Terry. But then eventually he turns into be a nice guy after all, and he decides he really wants to be a father to Terry. And so that's fine. Now he has also a father figure as well as a mother. And as I said, the story goes on over the years. We later on see him when he is Terry, when he is in his early teens, and Inez and Lucky have also aged appropriately. And by the last part of the movie, Terry is in his later teens. He's about 17 years old. And yes, eventually that fake identity catches up with everybody. Terry turns out to be an exceedingly gifted child. He turns out to be really, really smart. And the school system notices that, and they want him to go to a special school where his unusual intellectual gifts will be nurtured. And he is not an enthusiastic student. It appears that his intellect is such that he can do top work and be noticed by all the teachers as being brilliant without putting any effort into it at all. But that's the kind of kid he apparently is. And he doesn't particularly want to go to the new school. He doesn't especially want to have his intellectual talents nurtured. And that becomes a point of suspense for a while in the movie. And I won't tell you how that turns out. But again, eventually, this change of identity catches up with everybody. And there could be big trouble. And it could turn out that he could be in a lot of trouble. And it all has to do with that possible switch to a new school. It could turn out that he and Inez will finally get busted for this masquerade, which they've both been pulling off for a long, long time. He hasn't given it any thought. This all happened when he was a little kid. So for him, it's just part of his life, part of his identity. But then again, it all catches up with them. So 1001 has been getting a tremendous amount of acclaim, largely because of the performance of Teyana Taylor, who plays Inez. And it is, in fact, a wonderful performance. The various kids who play Terry are all good as well. And William Catlett, who plays Lucky, is very, very good as well. But it's really Teyana Taylor's movie. It is so much her movie that when she isn't right there in the middle of the screen, the movie becomes less powerful. I think that the movie is not awfully well written. It kind of rambles, it's kind of disjointed, and it doesn't always hold together. And for me, that diminished its dramatic power, which from the subject matter should be extreme. That said, Teyana Taylor's performance is wonderful. It's a good thing to see a sincere, grittily told story about Black people with underprivileged lives in today's New York City. One of the fascinating things is one of the years that the story takes place in is 2001, and 9/11, the famous attacks on the World Trade Center, aren't even mentioned in the movie. There are some little news clips here and there which kind of orient us in the historical setting. But, you know, I was living in Manhattan during 9/11, and, you know, it wasn't the only thing that happened in people's lives. So it's an interesting movie. It's a dramatic movie. I don't think it's a movie that quite works, but if you want to see a movie that is very realistic about the lives of underprivileged Black people in New York today, 1001 is the movie to see. So that is my a little bit musical story this week.